Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on book 6 of the Lost Fleet series of books, Victorious. This is the one that kind of completes the first major arc. I believe there's two, maybe three other arcs in the series of novels.
I think a third arc has started, Genesis Fleet, maybe?
And I think that's like a prequel sort of a one, but we'll talk about those if and when we read them. This started with them, the Lost Fleet, having made it back to Alliance space and kind of is, I don't want to say an epilogue of sorts, but it kind of is.
Well, it's very much a dealing with loose ends and closing the Syndic War chapter, if you will, of this universe.
There were a lot of things that were set up in previous books that needed to get paid off. And each one of the books has a good beginning, middle, and end, but relies heavily on what's gone before while still remaining accessible.
Yeah.
And it's funny because a lot of comic books are told in kind of six increments. Granted, they're usually comic book issues, not, you know, full novels or whatever. But there's a lot to be said for having a beginning, middle, and end of each installment you buy, having that accessibility, telling me what I need to know, reminding me what I need to know, even though you may have told me that in the last installment or a few back. And particularly with full-length novels that are 300 and some odd pages a piece, we're, what, nearly 2,000 pages in on the story, all said and done at this point?
Yeah.
And there's a lot to keep track of, some that you don't have to keep track of, like who's captaining what ship and all that stuff.
How many ships there are in the fleet.
Yeah, which ones are currently, you know, about to be destroyed or crippled or what have you. But it didn't feel like an overwhelming amount to read.
Yeah, it was page turning most of the time. I think with this book, the first third, give or take, was slower than some of it.
It was, but the ground they had to cover was really establishing the Alliance.
Yes.
Because it's the first we've seen of them, the politics, Gary's relationship with all of that.
Well, and part of it was in that first third, he was trying to figure out how to report to the Alliance everything that had happened in the previous five books.
Well, and who could he trust and how far could he trust them?
Yeah, and they were questioning him on the decision, both the politicians and some of the military leaders.
It was some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had to get them to order him and his fleet to go back so he could go end the war.
Well, it was very interesting when he says, you know, I have this list of things I'm hoping you'll approve. I made some field promotions I'm hoping that you will put through, etc. And they're kind of shocked with this whole, what do you mean you expect us to rubber stamp them? Don't you think those just automatically coast on through?
Well, and one of the guys had said that the phrasing Gary was using felt anachronistic to them.
Yeah.
You know, ancient or whatever. I forget the exact word he used. But it there were a lot of things that were underscoring, here's a guy from 100 years back.
Yeah.
Who's having to adjust to the way things are being done and the state of things.
Well, and throughout the book, they pointed out that he has signed off on all of his messages to the Syndic with to the glory of our ancestors or something to that effect, which was
to the honor of our ancestors,
which was 100 years old, kind of the equivalent of sincerely.
Mm-hmm.
But when we get to Syndic space and they deal with one of the Syndics, one of those officers signs off with their equivalent to the antiquated farewell. And somebody looks over with just a surprise. I can't remember the last time a Syndic used basically a polite farewell in a message to an Alliance person.
Well, and it also harkened back to a time at which the two were able to conduct business civilly.
Yes.
Between the two different, you know, groups.
Well, and one of the things that's brought up through all the books, but especially in these last two, is we've reached a point where people don't listen to to each other. They talk, but they don't hear.
Yeah. Well, and what they believe and what's true aren't in alignment.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what we'd heard about how the Syndic treated their prisoners, I don't think we really saw any sign of.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, we saw a lot of things that ran counter to that.
And that's something that I really, especially in the previous book, I wish there'd been something to address that.
Because the Alliance was doing horrific things to prisoners because, well, you know, the Syndic does it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finding, well, there are a lot who've been taken prisoner versus being killed and things of that sort.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of ground that could be explored there.
There's a lot you can justify based on assumption. But when your assumptions are undermined, not just by information, but by proven fact, by undeniable in your face, you're seeing the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
There should be that moment where you have to face your own action and reevaluate.
Well, and there's a lot of how things got from where they were 100 years ago in Gary's time, although we don't know specifics, we know generalities, to how they are now. You could see how on a wartime footing on both sides, things that somebody knew weren't true would get said to motivate people and move things in the direction that they needed to go to survive.
Yeah.
The other thing that happened beyond just him getting the fleet back, getting reprovisioned and resituated, was within a week they're heading back to go take care of the war and try to, you know, end it, hopefully peacefully.
Under the command of a fleet admiral.
Yes, he gets massively promoted, much against his wishes, but believably so in all senses.
Well, and it took me a while to fully understand the against his wishes.
Again, it's the love affair that had gone unstated, but was pretty clear or whatever, between him and Captain Desjani.
Yeah, see, I felt it was more understandable when he was saying, basically, nobody's held that title in 100 years, and I don't feel qualified to be the first to take it.
Well, that's the thing, is it's not that it hadn't been held in 100 years, it's that nobody had ever held it.
Yeah.
Yet there is the title, and there are
the insignia.
The insignia and all of that for it.
Yeah.
That puzzled me.
Yeah.
Because why would you have that and never fill it? And if it had just been, well, we never had somebody, you know, survive long enough or something. So there was a little confusion there for me. But the rationale of, if you're going to go broker the peace, you've got to have the authority to do it. This gives you that. And the, we're afraid of a coup, this kind of diffuses that as well.
Yes. The military sees we respect you if we promote you.
Yes.
And the fact that the politicians were shocked that, going back to that, he had this list of things he wanted them to approve, and when they looked it over, there was nothing for him on it.
Well, and they're like, what do you want?
Yeah, and he's like, I want you to approve my field promotions.
Yeah.
Because he genuinely didn't understand. They were saying, but what do you want for yourself?
When they realized he was a man of honor and not somebody who would take advantage of the situation, as would the admiral he had replaced.
Yeah.
They realized we can work with this guy and we probably ought to work with this guy.
Well, and the current head of the council was saying something to the effect of, what terrifies us most is that you may be challenging us to be our best selves.
Well, there was a line about how they needed to become worthy of the expectations he had of them.
Yeah.
And that they knew they were not.
Yeah.
It would be, again, as if there was somebody from 100 years ago, where America was at a very different point in time, in today's world, reminding us of kind of the best that America was back then.
Mm. You know, it's actually funny you say that. I watched a documentary with our parents within the past few days that was about a project the military had worked on. Someone had found the remains of a aircraft from World War II that had gone missing, and they finally found it off the coast of a small island just beyond Italy.
Mm-hmm.
But as they're going through and they're explaining, okay, we're hoping that three missing personnel from this aircraft are actually in the aircraft and would finally let their families know they're not missing in action. They right. died and this is where they've been. So they decided to kind of recap the story of the aircraft in this documentary. And they said that part of why it was so important to find this specific aircraft was that it was the very last aircraft to come off of a production line in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And what made it so special was that the production facility had been running out of money because in World War II, everything, you know, so tight on money, etc. And because they were out of money, the factory workers had chipped in their own money to complete this aircraft and make sure that it didn't run low on parts, that it wasn't below standards.
Right. They wanted to do their part for the war effort.
Exactly. And so this specific aircraft had been featured in numerous newspaper articles in Tulsa, Oklahoma, because the city had laid claim to the plane that they didn't just build physically, but monetarily.
There was a, I don't want to say sentimental value, but an emotional meaning to the...
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up, because one of the things that was throughout this series, and I also mentioned in this book, because there was a new class of ship, was how over the century, between budget cuts and, well, we can cut this corner, whatever, and ships not being built to last that long, because they were getting lost left, right, and center, that stuff that Gary had noticed in the first book of there are rough edges on this chair, this desk, whatever, it wasn't worth polishing the chrome. It didn't last long enough.
Well, and by the last book, what he was noticing was this newest class of ships, they were figuring since the ships were rarely apart from one another, but they were always moving in formation, why put sufficient sensors on any one ship to do everything? And instead, they basically gave each ship 1/6 of the sensors. But that meant that 6 ships had to be together at all times.
Well, and they weren't as fast, they weren't as durable, they were smaller, and there were concessions made on everything.
Yeah, they had fewer weapons. The weapons they had carried less ammo cartridges, for lack of a better expression. It was just in every single way they were lacking. And he struggled to find a strength to say at least they have maneuverability or at least they have speed. And he couldn't find one.
I would like to see in potentially the next series of novels if he's had a chance to influence some of those decisions and point out, if you cut this corner, you've at least got to do this.
Yeah.
You know, or make these changes. Yeah, it may not be as big of an auxiliary ship, but it can keep up with the fleet.
Yeah.
You know, you could have 6 of them versus the 4. You spread your risk or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, just the difference in mindset of something that's expected to last 20 years versus 2 battles, if that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of those things kind of sprinkled throughout.
Well, and when he was making his report, one of the admirals basically accused him of lying because, well, that battle can't really have taken place. You didn't lose enough ships.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the mindset of how they all just charged in without real regard for tactics or strategy. It was more kind of like, I want to say, the Braveheart approach of everybody just run as fast as you can and hope you hit something.
Well, one of the lines in one of the previous novels was how they'd have done just as well if they just plowed straight into the other ships.
Yeah.
And for that to have been considered the norm,
mm-hmm.
and he's, it's like, no, it doesn't have to be.
Well, and what was the phrase they used periodically of some of the captains thought fighting spirit could make up for a number of deficiencies?
Yeah, rushing in headlong to battle is more important than surviving it.
Yeah.
It was like a line from Babylon 5, The Legend of the Rangers, one of the 2-hour movies, where the Rangers had the motto, live for the one, die for the one. And it was, I guess, Ambassador Jakar at the time who was saying, you place so much emphasis on the latter, what about the former? Why is it so important to die for the one versus living for the one?
Yeah.
You know, and it was a great speech. It was very well written. But it's one of those things that you need a certain amount of willingness to go to war, but too much of it, you're wasting resources.
Yeah.
Well,
this book had, as I recall, a good conversation with Jane Gary, the grandniece.
It did, but she didn't play as much of a role in this book as I was expecting.
No, I felt like we were getting breadcrumbs for the future.
That's fair. That's fair. Because we got one good conversation and we were told another one happened.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of okay with that. But I was expecting more of her in this.
I was hoping for more, but I was grateful because it gave me hope that we're going to keep getting her.
Yeah.
we weren't going to kill her off like we had so much of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Our interaction with the aliens wasn't what I expected.
It was not, and we still haven't really gotten to know the aliens.
True. I mean, we're starting to get a better idea of their mindset in terms of deception is really their game. And they can't understand alliance. And I don't mean the alliance. I mean two forces working together.
They seem territorial, and we don't understand what's their motivating mindset or what's their paradigm.
They're baffled that the Alliance fleet would stand in defense of any Syndic star system.
Well, because again, to them, it's a matter of possession. This is ours. That's not yours.
Yeah.
Why are you defending what's not yours?
Yeah.
And I'm hoping the next series of novels explores the aliens a lot more.
Well, and that's what I'm curious about. Will it explore the aliens and the war we're hoping to avoid with the aliens, which I think it'll be kind of more of a Cold War than this 100-year war?
I'm expecting that. I think it's not out-and-out hostilities, but the threat of looming war. And I'm expecting there to be a bit more of, we got to understand the aliens, they've got to understand us.
Well, and I feel like we should be rebuilding the Syndic space.
I expect as a subplot the restructuring of the Syndic worlds into the lesser realms or whatever they become.
I feel like we had the collapse of the Soviet Union, and now we're going to find out what it means to be Russia versus Ukraine versus...
I think that's a great analogy. I definitely think that, and I see that hopefully as a subplot, not the main plot, but it almost has to be a major subplot because to engage with the aliens, they need to be in Syndic space.
Yeah.
Or former Syndic space. So that's the theater of war or potential war.
Well, and some of the interesting things that were happening was people were willing to surrender, but not to the Alliance, to Captain John Gary.
Well, again, the Alliance was the one who was killing people and doing all sorts of horrific things, bombarding planets. Gary was fighting with honor.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing where promoting him to the fleet admiral was just a smart move.
Yeah.
Because now it implies, well, the rest of the fleet's gonna work this way.
Well, and Gary was smart enough and aware enough, and he had Rione and now two other senators at his side as this is all happening. But he was aware enough that when people are surrendering, saying in exchange for protection, to be saying, I can't leave the fear.
Yeah.
We have to go further. I mean, we can do things to help you defend yourselves, and there is a reasonable
amount. There's a bigger picture
but
that has to be dealt with. We can't stay and protect everybody.
Yeah. And the fact that he could keep sight of that big picture, I think that was one of the greatest strengths of the character.
Well, and that's something we've seen throughout because...
Oh, definitely.
He was always looking at the bigger picture of the war or battle they were in while letting Desjani and the other captains handle the minutiae of their ships.
Well, and his goal from the beginning was the survival of as much of the fleet as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because he recognized from the moment he took command, he could not get 100% of the personnel, 100% of the ships home.
Yeah.
And now his view has widened from fleet to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's gotten others to view the Syndics as fellow human versus the enemy.
Well, and I liked how when they were defending the Syndic realm, the system or whatever, the Syndics offered to work with him.
Yeah.
And he's like, and as Johnny pointed out, it's like, we may just target them out of habit.
Yes. Yes. Well, and he pointed out, we haven't trained together.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about our own modern head, where they point out, we do training missions and training drills together for a reason.
Yeah.
It's so we know how to work in a coordinated effort.
Well, and you can't take somebody who literally yesterday or earlier that morning was your enemy.
Yeah.
Or in this case, last week, depending. I mean, but for the Syndics, it was that day. And suddenly be on the same side.
Yeah.
It's hard to turn on a dime like that.
Well, but his pointing out that basically we can be the first line of defense and you can be the second line of defense. And meaning is no insult, but simply pointing out that the fleet had more ships, stronger ships.
Well, we can engage the enemy. You can defend your people.
Yes.
And I thought that was well handled.
Yeah, giving them a place of honor, a place of respect, and not discounting them or setting them aside, but keeping the two forces separate.
Well, there was a lot about how captains in this fleet had to be diplomats.
Yes.
And how he was not. But he was also very diplomatic on a regular basis with how he handled people.
Yeah. Well, I found it hilarious at the end when Rione comes to him and says, you have a message you're going to receive
yes.
in an hour or two. And it's basically a, you know, she's been spying on me all along and I know it. But for once, she's actually doing something totally for his benefit. And in some ways, it comes across as an apology.
Well, there were one or two other people that had clearly arranged certain things to mm-hmm. his benefit.
Yeah.
The shuttle that happened to be there.
Yes, exactly.
When he finally gets with Desjani, who's skipped the ship pretty much to bail on him, to give him time to explore what's out there. And he's like, no, don't need that. When they finally get together and stuff and they're heading out, one of
Tulev's
guys, here's your you know, sea bag kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Uniform and all that. And again, there's the implications of a lot of behind the scenes things happening.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to me, it implied Desjani probably talked to Tulev and Duelos or whatever. About what do? I've got to give him this chance, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's the implication of immediately after the events of this book, they're getting the captain of whatever charter ship they're on to go to her homeworld to marry them while they're still captains.
See, and I haven't decided how I feel about that.
There's an aspect where the whole romance between those two was, I don't want to say heavy-handed, but almost unnecessary.
Unnecessary, at times rushed. I looked at them as the work friends who balanced each other.
Yeah, and I don't think the love story was, you know, unreasonable or a deterrent or anything. I just don't know that it had to be.
I think if the love story had happened in a novella between series, in terms of hadn't been happening in these six books, but they had ended up on the same ship because he had been talking about going to her home planet.
Yeah.
Because it's basically the only place he could think of that he wanted to go. And if the two of them had actually gone and relaxed together
mm-hmm.
and realized even when there's no pressure and they're not working together, they get along together.
That might have worked.
That would have been more believable to me.
I guess for me, Gary's relationship both with Rione and then the non-relationship with Desjani or whatever was a little bit more of a romance type thing and what's otherwise a sci-fi or war book.
The thing for me with the relationship with Desjani is they spent so much time forcing themselves to be professional and forcing themselves to not talk about what was going on that they never took the time to relax together, to be open together. So to immediately go from, okay, the pressure's off, let's get married.
I thought there was enough seeds that they both knew how each other felt.
They know how they feel, but it's more of a, they don't know how they are together when they're relaxed.
Yeah, it definitely puts their relationship in a very different mode for another series of novels.
Yes.
And not in a bad way, but one that if it had not been there, I wouldn't have noticed its absence.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it to be there as it was. But I think there are also aspects of this that are reminiscent of the revived Battlestar Galactica, but between Adama and the president.
Oh, I see.
So I don't think it's derivative of, but again, that's the kind of relationship plots that tend to get put into stories.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, I really enjoyed it. I thought it did a good job resolving the Syndic War.
Yes.
Getting the fleet home, going a couple of steps beyond that. It ended on a good note. I don't know where the next story picks up, but I think we said it goes for, what, 5 novels or something?
Yeah.
And I'm certainly game for reading them.
Yeah, I'm curious. I want to see more of this universe. I want to see where they go next.
To me, the biggest risk with this series of novels in the bigger picture, because we've completed one arc, is if and when they tell arcs that are not based on Gary and this group of characters, is it that we really like the writing or the writing of these characters?
And that's an excellent question, because I will wholeheartedly admit that Gary and his humility really is one of the strengths mm-hmm. of it for me. The fact that he stops, he thinks, he doubts himself, he questions things in a way that I find kind of charming.
Well, and he's been our singular viewpoint to this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And how different does the universe look and feel through somebody else's eyes?
Yeah.
And I'm willing to you know, find out, because I've really been enjoying these books.
Mm-hmm.
They're well told. It's an interesting world. It's funny, though, because one of the things that this book actually did that hadn't been done in the previous ones, or if it was, I missed it, was it described the look of the ships.
That's true. Yes.
How they looked like fish. Sharks and fish and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was by that because it hadn't been there before. And they seemed to have to do it because they were struggling to describe the alien ships.
Yeah. So as fully realized as this world is, even six novels in,
mm-hmm.
there's things that we hadn't realized we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I really don't recall early on if we got physical descriptions of a lot of these characters.
Yeah, the main description I remember is actually Gary and the not shaving. And it was gradually as he thawed out, he made a point of actually shaving.
Interesting. Okay. And it That'd was be back in the of, first book. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was early on, he kind of admitted to himself, he realized he was using that stubble as an extra layer of defense
mm-hmm.
between him and the world. And that was one of the few physical descriptions that I remember thinking, hadn't thought of stubble in that sense.
Yeah. But I would be hard pressed to point to in any of these six novels a physical description of this Johnny, of Gary, of
yeah.
a lot of these others. And that's not a problem because we feel like we know them.
Yeah, exactly.
But if we go back to the Time Wars novels,
yes,
we got not massive descriptions, but across the different books, one would give a good personality description, another more physical description, another more of kind of an attitude or you know, body language description or what have you.
Yeah.
That by the time we got through that series, you pretty much knew you could pick these people out of a lineup, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Out of walking down the street, you knew who they were. Whereas here, you've got a lot more fluidity and options as to how you would cast if you were to do this as a TV show or a movie.
Yeah.
And again, nothing right or wrong about that, just different approaches.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I've noticed in a lot of the Star Trek novels, because since they're based on TV shows, well, you know who the characters are. You just need to know this one's Kirk.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I actually was noticing the cover to the various books and the fact that most of them had, presumably, Gary in what looked like neck-to-toe armor
mm-hmm.
with a real big gun.
I don't know that we ever saw him with a personal firearm any point. It wasn't until this novel that he'd actually left the Dauntless. Yeah.
I mean, it was just looking at the covers going, that's not really how I see him walking around the ship. I mean,
yeah.
it doesn't really fit with a single scene I can think of from the entire book.
Well, and as a heavy comic book reader, sometimes the lack of physical descriptions in the book mean I don't really have a particular envisioning of the character.
Yeah.
Versus when I'm reading a comic, I see the character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what that means is what at least the artist of a comic book sees the character as is what I'm going to see. Maybe not the writer, but there is no artist on a novel. And what the writer sees of these characters, I can't sometimes if they don't describe it. And even if they do, I may interpret that a little differently.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. But again, the writer's got a good flow for the writing. It reads well.
Mm-hmm.
There was another time in this book where Gary was holding the breath he hadn't realized he was holding or whatever.
That's funny.
It's like, yeah, there are a couple of phrases that get, and not many. That's one of the few I could point to that get reused. But it's an easy read. It's a comfortable read. It's mm-hmm. an entertaining story. And I feel that we really get into the mindset of the world, the characters, and the situation.
Yeah.
So it's definitely one that I'm glad we've read these novels and I've enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, I think continuing with these books in kind of the order they were released makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that gets us through at least the next arc or two. And then I think it's the Genesis Fleet's what they're calling. What are the kind of the two books that look to be prequels?
Oh, interesting.
Which are the latest two.
Yeah, I'm curious.
So we will do those as we have time. But finding the time to read 330 some odd or plus pages, that That takes a little while.
Yeah, it does. It's worth it.
It is. Yeah. It is. And it's not hard.
No.
But again, I find I stay up a little bit later on the nights when I'm starting to read. So I'll just do one more chapter.
Well, and they're 30-page chapters, so yeah.
Yeah, so definitely recommend them. Again, I found out about these through the graphic novel, or really the series, the miniseries that Titan did. Don't know if they're planning on doing another one. I kind of hope they do. And certainly, I want to read more of the novels.
Yeah.
So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.